This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sox Machine.
James Fegan, White Sox reporter for SoxMachine.com.
I can anticipate this question is probably way too early.
On Twitter at JR Fegan.
Yes, James.
Asking the questions to get the answers you need.
If you knew that Abreu was available to be the runner there, would you have gone to him instead of Hendrick?
Yeah, if I'd known that, I'd know that. I'd check the rule. I'm guessing you know the rules better. Now I know.
James Fegan on 670 The Score.
We want Machine. Sox Machine.
We go out to the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. That is where we find our friend James Fegan. He is of Sox Machine. It is my favorite guest open on The Score. The White Sox beat reporter for SoxMachine.com. You can check out his work on X at JR Fegan. James, I feel like we have a lot to discuss with you. It's been a minute since we talked, and I think I want to start with the not the aspect of the Sox having a good weekend, especially taking their second series of the season, which is a plus, but from the aspect of, I have not talked about Colson Montgomery with you. And in the spirit of venting to guests on the midday show, which I believe was a tradition started well before me.
Yeah, I believe so.
I can't help but think that this is an indictment of the organization. When you consider how many prospects come up via trade, this person was drafted in 2021, considered at one point to be the 13th best prospect in all of baseball, talked about like he was going to be the team's opening day shortstop. And to see the fall even from March until now, I don't know how you don't look at this as some sort of indictment of the organizational health here.
It's certainly a project that they've centered a lot as being, you know, how much of that is feeling like Colson was especially marketable or, you know, a face that the fans could embrace, but someone they've centered a lot in what they feel like the future of the team is going to look like. So on some sense, like Colson could shake out to be like a guy who, you know, eventually figures it out, has a high strikeout rate, hits low average, but, you know, gets to 25 home runs and like, still be like someone you look at like at the end of like, oh, draft in the back of the first round, you know, became kind of a mistake power hitter. All right, maybe moved off the third base. Like, that's not bad value. That's not a bad outcome. Like, useful big leaguer, but is tracking towards not being maybe the centerpiece of a winning team that they kind of marketed him as. So I think that reads as a bigger misjudgment than maybe just him not working out or any good prospect in a vacuum kind of falling backwards would say. So I get what you mean in terms of like, this was someone who was really pushed as leading the charge of what the next good team is going to be. And now is probably someone you don't put in the top five organizationally or prospects. That said, like, you know, this has happened before for prospects. I don't think like Colson's done because he's going to, you know, the complex league to work out things. Like, you know, Marcus Thames even said like he had gone through that at one point in his career. It's just, we're now picking up a very large sample of like not expecting this to be like a guy who, you know, walks more than he struck out, like an A-ball like he used to do, or posted like 400 OBPs and it's just going to live on base. Like, it's more like we've started seeing like the limitations in this game get really like calcified in a way that even if they kind of get him going again in a way where he's a productive player, it's probably not going to be like this, you know, best player on a division winning team type of situation. And that's really, I think, what fans are probably led to believe, and certainly coming off of feeling like they got sold a bill of goods with the last crop of prospects who didn't like kind of show up to the potential that they were billed as. I think it's going to lead a lot of people to kind of feel like, all right, same old, same old. Even if there are other projects that are going better, to feel good about.
James, I appreciate you taking my call on the venting portion of the guest being on our midday show on The Score. But I do
are you
also...
Are you sure that's all the venting portion?
No. In fact, I had a follow-up. I agree with you about this feeling similar. I think it also just illustrates perhaps how deep the hole they're in. When development from the minor leagues to the big leagues was such a topic of discussion as to why Chris Getz is in place to begin with. They've talked a lot about implementations of technology that weren't there previously. But at some point, you have to start seeing some of this come online in a way that isn't just from the players you've traded for. Great that we're talking about guys like Chase Meideroth. You know, great that that's happening. But and great that I think Miguel Vargas has come on in a way that makes you more encouraged. But I also want to see what they're doing with their own people, too, who came up through the system originally.
For sure. I think not producing in the draft is pretty much, I mean, there's a lot of reasons why the last competitive cycle went through. But like, as far as, you know, what they got out of Gavin Sheets, Jake Berger, Nick Madrigal, Andrew Vaughn, that run of like drafting super high, that was a big reason why that project kind of fell through. And I think there have been hints, like certainly having Noah Schultz and Hagen Smith. And I want to say that their last few drafts have shown a lot more promising signs, but they're critically low on bats for a system. And so for Colson to take a step backwards and what you kind of can expect him to be, even if like this is kind of the nadir and, you know, it's dangerous to overreact right now to what he is and maybe winds up being like a power hitter that people enjoy, it kind of lays bare like, this is a shortcoming that are they going to be able to address this through their last really big trade chip in Luis Robert? Is this something that they're going to, you know, invest more in the draft? They've been kind of pitching heavy because they feel confident they can develop that. How is the offense going to come in the system if the draft the kind of the most high profile draft develop project is going this direction? I can see how it contributes to the anxiety of that, which was already present before this happened.
James, it was a nice weekend for the White Sox.
It really was.
I mean, I saw good things. Even when they lost, like they made some good contact off of Hunter Brown on Saturday. I enjoyed seeing that. Yesterday, they come back from down 4-1 in the fifth to win the game. Here's the question, because I've been texted now twice, once during this show by a big time watch the White Sox no matter what. Two of my White Sox fan friends have said to me, yo, I know it's still bad. They're 10-24, but this team is different. And I feel like we want to be optimistic about it. We don't want to think about the White Sox losing 100 games again. Is this team different, better than last year's?
Well, they're on a 47 win pace, so they're comfortably striding ahead now after winning a series. I think this team I think the defense has kind of been fundamentally better, and that, you know, provides just like less ugliness on a day-to-day basis. I thought it was really instructive that they faced Lance McCullers. Obviously, I missed 3 years first start back Lance McCullers, but 2021 they faced Lance McCullers in the playoffs. He eats their lunch. Lance McCullers throws a ton of breaking balls, throws a ton of chase pitches. He was kryptonite for that like 2021 offense that was like way more talented than this one, but chased all the time. If you just pelted them with sliders out of the zone, they would chase them. And so, like, Lance McCullers was their undoing in that series. This team doesn't have nearly as much talent to do anything with pitches in the zone, but is very a lot better at, like, not chasing out of the zone. So it's a diminished form of Lance McCullers, but to see him make them, like, he threw over, like, 85 pitches without even getting out of the fourth inning, just kind of shows, like, they're not better, but they're a different type. And I think from a viewing experience, you appreciate the players who are maybe maximizing what they're doing with very limited tools, as opposed to seeing, like, you know, some of the most talented hitters you've ever seen kind of wasted with poor approaches. So I think they're a bit more lovable than they have been in the past. even if love might be a strong word with how the fans feel about this White Sox team.
Yeah, 47 win pace. I don't know if that's love or not, but yeah, I hear yeah. you.
Hey, it's an improvement. Okay?
They don't inspire as much like revulsion as like how they're going about it. So it's encouraging. Like, well, if they play like this when they have more talent, it'll be better, is the kind of overriding logic.
Can we talk about Tyler Osick? I'd like to talk about Tyler Osick with you here, James. For people who don't know, Tyler Osick is a former White Sox prospect. And a tweet that he sent out that has since been scrubbed, but we haven't. I heard, and shout out to Matt Spiegel. I heard him talking about it on Hit and Run. And so I wanted to follow up with you on it today. And here is the tweet that is sent out, you know, talking about guys that there was a lot of hope for. Here's Tyler Osick. He says in a tweet, "I'll tell the truth here. Andrew Vaughn would be out in Arizona golfing, and we would all be grinding in Arizona at the facility in the off season. And he'd show up 2 times per week, dumbbell press 40 pounds, take 20 swings off the machine, show up and hit 250 with 15 bombs and 500-plus at-bats, then repeat the next year. To me, that was just a slap in the face to all the people grinding to make it, given the keys to the game, and took it for granted. Promote Tim Elko."
Woo!
What do you say about that, White Sox beat writer?
I can't speak to like what Tyler witnessed in the offseason or like how representative it is of like Andrew Vaughn's entire like routine. I will say, like, you know, generally, whatever White Sox people talk about Andrew Vaughn, they kind of laud his clubhouse present and work ethic in a way that, like, there's not, like, the results haven't been there, so it's kind of like the thing they can center on. But I think the way his career has gone, where he hasn't produced and, you know, hasn't necessarily progressed, I think it kind of invites people to kind of look at it and say, well, maybe what I saw kind of indicates why this hasn't happened for him. Whereas, like, if somebody's putting up numbers, they'd be like, oh, that guy just knows what he needs to get ready. Whereas seeing someone who really hasn't, like, you know, chase and, you know, lack of plate discipline is, I think, is probably the main reason he hasn't, like, progressed. And, you know, back in 2023, when there was kind of division with the White Sox about, like, our guys embracing the eye pitch and the machine work that they're emphasizing, Vaughn was part of that group that was using it, but that doesn't become, like, a big part of his narrative because we don't really see the progress in his plate discipline. So I think the way that his, like, progress is kind of stagnated, it kind of invites to say, like, hey, is this part of his routine why it's not going up? Is this thing not why it's up? Like, that's kind of comes to the territory of the lack of progress he made, even if, you know, I can't say that what Tyler said is wrong or that Andrew wasn't doing more.
Mm-hmm. No, I got you. Okay, so aside from that, completely detached from it, is Elko somebody who could or should be promoted? Is he at least right about that part, aside from the Vaughn shot?
Elko is, like, clearly playing at a level where he's going to get promoted, like, at some point, and I think he inevitably plays in Chicago at some point this season. It's just a question of, he's like, if with for any, like, player in Charlotte, any minor leaguer, like, the front office can kind of look at it like, well, once we clear the decks of the trade deadline, this guy can play in the majors, and any productive guy in Charlotte we can try out.
Mm-hmm.
What's our rush to do it?
Right.
We have these guys that we're trying to kind of show off for trade opportunities. And I think that's going to take a bigger priority. At the same time, like, they've promoted guys like Edgar Caro and Chase Meidroff and are sensibly taking at bats away from younger players. So I think it does kind of speak to a little bit like Elko not really being a guy that they planned on really taking up and taking a longer window to be convinced in him than I think fans appreciate for someone who's kind of producing in a way that they obviously haven't seen the starting first base in the majors produce. So I think that deservedly produces a lot of attention from the fan base. But, like, you're starting to hear even, like, Sox people go on record like, yeah, we kind of thought that guy would hit a wall at some point, or that's a guy who's going to have to put up numbers at some point. I think Elgo's kind of outperformed in a way where he wasn't someone they envisioned being part of their long-term core. Like, you know, it was a senior signed for $35,000 as a 23-year-old in like the lowest level, who's just kind of kept getting better. But I think, especially we've seen, you know, with the tone of that tweet about Vaughn and having a guy who clearly has just kind of, you know, kept improving in a way where he's kept earning his promotions, even if they weren't kind of prescribed for him, really kind of lays bare the conflict of what fans would want to see of like, hey, this guy's earned it. Shouldn't he get a shot at some point? Which I think he will, but it doesn't seem like they want to really turn away from what their original plans are that quickly to do it, even if it's, you know, inevitable. We should see plenty of Tim Elko. It's just maybe they're still stuck in plan A of like, we want to play veterans and then trade him and then restock our farm system, and not going to like alter the plan for a guy that we never really saw as like the future cornerstone until he maybe proved it to us.
Well, I think it's a good problem to have, and B, on this team of all teams, it should be something you at least consider. The delta and the difference of who's up and who's not on this team in particular, that would indicate that this is something worth a shot. I also want to point out this. The last games for Luis Robert, 8 total. This is a wild set of numbers. Hits in 7 of his last 8 games. It's a .345 batting average. 3 home runs, 9 RBI, 8 stolen bases over those last 8. First player in White Sox history with 3 home runs and 8 stolen bases in an 8-game span. How encouraged are you by his production?
I mean, a lot. I think, you know, Getz was being asked like at the start of last homestand about Robert and slow start. And he kind of like, it seemed like a little crack in the facade of like, we just wanted to keep him healthy in April. Like, what wanted him to not pull a hamstring or do something like a soft tissue injury in the cold weather. Like, they kind of feel like now that he's out of it or things are warming up, like, all right, if they've dodged that first bullet, he's eventually going to trend up, especially like you're still seeing like the bat speed, like be where it's supposed to be, taking more pitches and taking more walks than ever. Like, unless he's been like monstarred, like it should turn around. So, and especially having him kind of run wild on bases is like a big, like flashing red, like I'm healthy, like for him to do that. So yeah, they kind of felt like this was a little inevitable, but it's a lot easier to say that after seeing it for a week after, as opposed to watching him just, I mean, even Saturday, he had the golden sombrero and swinging at sliders. So that's still in him. He's still going to be a streaky player probably until his dying day. But it's a little bit easier to say like, all right, the talent's clearly in there. It seems like he's coming around a bit. Maybe it's not going to be MVP level player, but it's going to be valuable Luis Robert again.
Yeah. When you talked about the White Sox against Lance McCullers and those particular batters having trouble against the slider, the amount of years that I've spent talking about those particular batters having trouble against the slider, I made a lot of money talking about it over those years, but it also left you with some scars.
Oh, you know gamble? What I'm Is that what you're saying?
No, it was my job. I was hosting when Chuck was at the ballpark. I was hosting White Sox pre and post game.
I know.
It was great, but it kind of stunk because I was like, oh no. Yes, that was the entire batting approach. James,
I remember talking with like a White Sox person like a few years back about like, I was trying to be like overly gentle and like specific about it. Like, oh, this pitcher, he has doesn't quite match up with you for like this and that reason. They thought like, doesn't match up with us. You mean he's right-handed with a slider?
Yes. Yes, that is the exact thing. All right. So it's not just me, and it wasn't just our show, and it wasn't just the analysts. All right. Well, I'm glad to see we all were in that space of time together. At least we have that to bind us.
The story is corroborated. Boom.
James, thanks for the therapy session, but most importantly, the information.
All right. Thanks for having me.
That was James Fegan joining us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline.